Welcome, everyone, to the Comedy Sports Podcast with today's special guest host, Kyle Hannikin Skywalker, sitting down to talk with a stand-up gal, Christine Rollo Capriolo.
Welcome, everyone, to the Comedy Sports Podcast. I am Kyle, your guest host for today's episode, because we finally got Christine Rollo Capriolo sitting on the other side of the table.
That's right, Kyle. I see the sun on this side and a beautiful plant. This is a lovely view.
Yes, yes, you are facing south. What more could you ask for?
That must be the special seat for all of our guests so far. So I'm the guest this week.
You are. We are going to get your story, Christine.
Oh,
it
my
is
gosh.
Long overdue.
Oh, it's exciting.
And we're going to jump right in. Christine, tell me, where were you born and raised?
I was born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
That's right. I've lived in the Milwaukee area my whole life, except when I went to college in Madison, but born and raised in Milwaukee.
Lovely, mm-hmm. Lovely. And tell me, what type of a kid were you?
I was always the goofy, silly, funny kid, or I thought I was funny. People said I was funny, so then I wore it like a badge of honor.
Who told you were funny?
Oh, my family, my friends. I always made silly faces and, you know, I have a memory. I was a little kid. My grandparents lived in Tomahawk, Wisconsin.
Tomahawk, all
right. The middle of nowhere, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
No lake. It was awful. It was in the middle of nowhere. The high point of the week visiting them was going to see the cows getting milked by Henry the farmer across the street. But they had a huge mirror in their living room. And I have a very distinct memory of sitting there and making silly faces in the mirror. And my grandma coming up behind me and saying, "You'd be such a pretty girl if you'd stop making those faces." To which I stuck my tongue out at her and I continued to make faces.
To make another silly face.
Yes. So I just was silly and goofy, and I always, you know, was putting on little shows. I remember when Michael Jackson came out with Thriller, the video that was released.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember?
I mean, oh, very much. Yeah,
like
the 10 minute video.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It was this long video. Well, my other grandparents who lived in Menominee Falls stole their cable. Like they didn't pay for it. Somehow they stole cable. I don't know.
Impressive.
It was very impressive. And I remember going to watch the premiere of Thriller the night it came out. Was it 81, 82 or something? Like we watched
early
it live.
80s, yep.
When it first came out. And I saw it so many times and I memorized it, and I would put on performances of Thriller like the game Countdown at Comedy Sports. Instead of doing it in a 15-minute long video, I did it in like 30 seconds, the entire video, and I would make these crazy faces and perform Thriller, or I'd act like Mr. Furley from Three's Company and quote him and his physical comedy. And I was always just being goofy as a kid, just a goofball.
That is a delight. Wow.
Yeah. No, I guess I never thought about it until sitting here across from you that it was like the game Countdown. I took it and I just did it in fast forward, the entire Michael Jackson Thriller video. And I don't know. I just was always putting on little shows and plays and performances and dances. And
so
I was
you had a performing gene.
I guess so.
It was in your blood from a young age.
I guess. And I don't know from who, but yeah. I mean, my dad's a goofball. My mom's a little more introverted, I would say,
okay,
than my dad. But
yeah.
So I think I got it from my dad. He's such a goof, but I don't know. I mean, I far exceed his goofiness at this point, I think. I don't know.
Let's thank that mirror for that inspiration. And tell me, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Yeah. When I was a kid, we did this game. I could write it out, although my dear listeners won't see it. Remember, there was a game like this. It kind of looks like a tic-tac-toe board, but you'd put more spaces. And so you'd say, like, who do you want to marry? And I'd be like, oh, I want to marry Matt Damon and LL Cool J and Ryan Gosling and Dave Nelson. And how many kids do you want? You'd name, like, number of kids, 8, 4, 2, 0. And then what do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
And I always said artist, actress, teacher, and mom.
Oh,
and
oh,
I'm
gosh,
actually
Christine.
An artist.
Uh-huh.
I've performed. I don't know what acted, but comedy sports. I'm an art teacher.
Yep.
And I'm a mom.
Incredible.
And so I actually did all the things I'd put in that game. to do.
How often does that happen?
I don't know. I mean,
as a young child, you accurately predict the future.
I'm amazing. No, I mean, I did want to be like movie star actors, right? Like go out to LA and be on the red carpet and all that stuff, which of course didn't happen, which is fine. But I mean, I consider comedy sports a big part of that, right?
Yes. So tell me how you discovered comedy sports. How did comedy sports enter your life?
When I went to high school, let's see, I was a public school kid, Milwaukee Public Schools up through eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And then, long story, details don't matter, but it happened to my brother too, who's 3 years older than I am. Neither of us got into the public school that we wanted to because it was a lottery system. They just picked a number, and if your number wasn't picked, you didn't get in.
Wow.
So my parents ended up sending the both of us to a private school, to Pius High School.
Okay. Both my parents went to Pius.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
My brother ended up being, he's 3 years older than I am. He ended up being like super popular, a soccer jock, and dated every girl there, and everyone loved him. And I came in and I was angry and sad and teen angsty because I left all my friends and I came to Pius and I didn't know anybody except my older brother.
Tough. Yeah.
And it was really hard. And I can just hear my dad right now listening to this going, oh, poor Christine. And I just had a really hard time. And I remember two of my brother's friends, Borch and Keith, were in comedy sports in high school. And my brother Tony told me that, like, oh, they're in comedy sports. And they would be like at assemblies and they'd be throwing candy out and everyone loved them and they were nice and they were happy. And I remember thinking, I want to be like that. I didn't want to be where everyone loved me. I wanted to be happy because I was not happy in high school. So then when it came to my, I think, end of sophomore year, I want to say there were auditions for the Pius High School comedy sports team.
Wow.
And at this point, I had already auditioned for some of the plays and the musicals, which I did when I was in middle school. And they never picked me. I was never in any of the shows in high school.
They're lost.
She's, thanks. The teacher seemed to have her favorites, and I was not one of them because I was, again, an angry, angsty teenager. And I remember going to these comedy sports auditions, and there were like 100 other kids auditioning. And accepting like 6 people or something. I mean, it was insane. And so I remember sitting there thinking, I wasn't nervous, but I was thinking, they're not going to pick me anyway. Screw this. I'm just going to do it. And so I wasn't nervous. I just got up there and I just did it. And I thought, what's the point? They're not going to pick me. So I just did it. I don't even remember what I did, but I remember being in the room and having this attitude of they're not going to pick me anyway.
But it channeled a carefree attitude.
It did. I just
which
came
just
out with,
seemed to lower all inhibitions.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I found out, I want to say that night or the next day, that they had picked me to be on the team. And I started then my junior year on the high school comedy sports team at Pius. That was 1991. That year, I think we still went down to Cults, and like Kurt Scholler was in charge of it. And so he was like super amazing, like, oh my God, it's Kurt. And so he was awesome. And we'd have practices and my senior year, I was the captain of the comedy sports team. I want to say, like, then we had our own private coaches like that, your professional comedy sports Milwaukee, like all the volunteers on the professional team who volunteered to do this would like get assigned to high school. And we had Cliff Bayer was our coach. I think that was my senior year. So then I just did it in high school and I'd go see the shows and I became addicted to watching the Dead Alewives Wednesday nights with all those guys.
Yep.
And
had you ever seen comedy sports before?
I can't remember.
High school. Really?
I don't
know.
I don't think so. I was thinking of that here. I'm like, when did I see them? I know I saw them when I was in high school.
Sure.
Because like I was doing it, you know, and Pius at that time, we had it was a large school and a very active theater and art program. And like when we had a show at Comedy Sports for the high school league, like it was packed. Like teachers were coming. It was crazy crowded. I mean, for years, it was just the most attended and everyone wanted to be on it. And I know I saw shows when I was in high school and like I met Dick, you know, I knew Dick down there and I knew all the high school guys that I played with and then ended up going to be on the team. You know, my senior, the ones who graduated were playing professionally then in Milwaukee, like Bill Bartel, Todd Bishop. Mark Redlich wasn't from my high school, but he performed. He was like a coach 1 year and he, you know, and like Kurt was down there. And when I was a senior, Tim Higgins came on the team. He auditioned. So Tim was on, Jason Denizak, Brian Allman. So all these pious people who ended up playing professionally, and some still do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it just kind of was my world, my high school years.
Awesome. So you had two joyous final high school years.
I did. It became better.
Participating in Comedy yeah. Sports High School League.
Yeah, I wasn't so angry anymore.
But what happened after you graduated?
I went to UW-Madison.
Okay.
And I knew they had a comedy sports team. I want to say Dick told me. I want to say Dick Chudnow told me. And my friend from high school, Ann Kelscher, who ended up being my roommate freshman year, she was also on the high school league team my senior year. And so we roomed together, and we got a hold of the guys in Madison. And at that point, they were kind of like changing over management. Like Joe okay. Thompson was still there, but like Brian Judkins was taking over, and Mark Molnitsky and Jess Main, she was doing tickets, but it was kind of like she and Mark and Brian were in charge. And Ann and I both started doing workshops there. And, you know, we've talked many times in the podcast how Madison kind of bounced all over locations and stuff.
Yeah.
So I remember doing workshops in like, I don't know if they got permission or we just went into like some of the buildings and found an empty room. I remember being in the humanities building once.
Sometimes that's all you need is an empty room.
Exactly. So we'd perform or we'd practice in empty rooms, and you know, then we had our workshop shows, and I feel like my freshman year, it was super fun. And then sophomore year, Anne went to like Argentina or Chile to study or something. So it was me coming back. Yeah. And there was the workshop show at the end of the workshop season.
Yeah, the showcase.
Year. Yeah. And I invited like every human being in my dorm. I lived in Whitty, and like I was friends with people on my floor, the eighth floor, but I became friends with people on the fifth floor. Mm-hmm. And so like I just had flyers everywhere because this was before the internet. We just put flyers everywhere.
Yep.
And I remember being so excited that all these people were going to come. And then I remember right before the show, like peeking out from behind the curtain. We were at the upstairs downstairs deli. And I remember Mark Molnitsky was in a booth doing sound. And I thought he was so cool because he was like one of the professionals in the Madison team actually showed up to do sound for our workshop.
Oh, sure.
So I was
like, oh my God,
that's
big
so cool.
deal. Yeah.
Right. And Brian Judkins was reffing. And Matt Finale, who ended up playing professionally too, was there. And I remember peeking out from behind the curtain and nobody was in the crowd. And I was so embarrassed because I told them like, oh my God, I'm bringing like 100 people. It's going to be so great. And nobody was there. And I was mortified. And then Brian is like, we're just going to start. And I was like almost crying. I was so embarrassed. Mark ended up like announcing everybody, and like Fred the head, somebody was there, and then Matt Finale. And then he introduced me last. And then the crowd went nuts between the time he started introducing people to the time I came out. Everybody that said would be there showed up, and it was like standing room only, and it was insane. And I was like, yeah, like I have a picture of me jumping on stage, and I felt like a rock star.
That's a way to start your showcase show, with that surprise.
Yeah, it was
energy.
Super cool. Rubberface. Rubberface was my nickname in high school because I made so many goofy faces. Like, I was just known.
There you go, right back to the mirror in Tomahawk, Wisconsin.
Yes, I was known for making just the craziest, silliest faces, and so they called me Rubberface. So I think that was probably maybe, I don't know, my nickname then at the showcase. But yeah, so that was the end of workshops because I remember coming back my junior year and still going to workshops and thinking, okay. Alex Shapiro was one of my best friends in college, and he played in the comedy sports team in Madison, and Matt Finale was in workshops with me, and Alex would drive me to practices. Like, Brian started saying, you guys should come to practice. And so we felt like we were kind of getting jerked around because we just kept coming to practice and not getting put on shows. And Alex picked me up once, and I probably said this in a show already. He was like the worst driver on the planet. He would pick me up from my dorm or my apartment at that point to drive me to Comedy Sports. And at this point, we were on the west side in Rocky Rococo's.
Okay, yeah.
So he would drive down one-way streets the wrong way, and I'd be screaming, Alex Shapp, oh my God! And he was just like, do-do-do. So it's amazing I'm alive to talk about it. But I remember going to all these practices and Brian having us watch the shows, but we were never in the shows. And so feeling really angry, getting to the point where I was like, I don't need this. Like, I don't need to give up my nights and my weekends anymore if he's not actually going to schedule us to play.
Sure.
So I got mono. It was really bad. And then while I had mono, Matt Finale got a show. And I was really happy for him, and I was really mad because I'm like, this is stupid. I'm not doing this. this anymore. And I remember Shap convinced me to go one more time. He's like, oh, come on, come on. We'll take you. I'll take you. It'll be fine. And when I got there, I was actually on the lineups, which I actually literally have right here.
Oh, my goodness.
My first comedy sports lineups in Madison, Friday, October 27th, 1995.
Incredible.
Yeah, I walked in and I was on a team with Brian Judkins, Alex Shapiro, and Sable Jack. I can't remember his first name. I was called him Sable Jackal. It was Sable Jack.
Is that Molnitsky as the designated jokester?
Molnitsky was the designated jokester.
Incredible. His name is written in both red and blue.
Yes.
We will have to post a photo of this lineup on our Instagram page.
Mark always wrote out the lineups, and Joe Thompson was the ref, and Murphy was sound. This is
7 years.
This is crazy.
Old,
I know.
And you still have it. And it's folded, but otherwise it's still
it is
in good shape. Preserved that very well.
I remember walking in and being so angry and complaining to Alex Shapiro the entire ride there. Like, this is stupid, and I hate Brian, and he's just leading us on, and we're never going to play.
It's like your high school league audition.
It was.
All inhibitions were down. You were just pissed off, and it paid off again,
it
Christine.
Did. So I walked, and the first thing, they led me to the lineups, and I looked at it, and I was like, I turned to Shap, and I said, please don't tell Brian what I said, because I was like, I can't believe, like, it was a big surprise. Like, it was a big surprise. Ha, you're playing. And it was so much fun. So, yeah, here are my first lineups.
Amazing. So you played your first official show in 1995.
Right. I did high school from 91 to 93, workshops from 93 to 95 in Madison, and then I started in 95.
Okay. Yeah. And now tell me, how long were you in Madison for? How long were you performing there?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe let's back up just a touch. You went to Madison for school. What did you major in?
I majored in art education.
Awesome.
I'm a teacher, and that's because my high school art teacher, Pat Frederick, was so amazing and inspired me. I wanted to be just like her. So I knew always I wanted to be an art teacher. And yeah, so I did that. I did the 5-year program. I took a little longer, which is fine.
Okay, yeah. Hey, I took 5 years of my undergrad. Oh, yeah.
I wish I could have taken like 20 years. College was the best. So, yeah, I studied art ed and did comedy sports on the weekends my last 3 years. Yeah.
Okay, so when you were done with college, did you move?
I did.
Right away?
Right. When I was done with college, I remember leaving at the end of summer. So it was like August 14th. There was always, Madison was like, your lease was done August 14th. Your new lease started August 15th. So I remember leaving August 14th because I stayed the summer and driving home right to MPS building because I was signing a contract with the Milwaukee Public Schools to be an art teacher.
Yeah, just
I
like
went,
that.
Well,
wow.
I went to some, I remember going to some like job fair or something for MPS, right?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I'm studying to be an art teacher. And they're like, oh, we need art teachers. And so they like, I'm like, I want to teach high school. They're like, oh, okay, we'll give you a high school job. And I'm like, awesome. But then I found out like somehow, oh, it's just ridiculous, but didn't end up, when I showed up at the first meeting the first week, they're like, who are you? And I'm like, what do you mean? I signed a contract. Like, I'm a high school art teacher. They're like, we don't have any high school openings. And so it was weird. Ooh. They didn't know what was going on. And so they made me what was called a day-to-day sub. So I started subbing for an art teacher who was out with some medical thing at a middle school.
Okay.
And every day I just subbed. Every day I was told, you're going back there, you're going back there. And finally, like end of October or something, they made me officially the classroom teacher there. So I taught my first year at a middle school here. And then 3 years at a high school at South Division at MPS, which is a whole other podcast. And then now I'm out in Brookfield.
Awesome. So you moved from Madison.
I did. I moved from Madison to Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. And did you instantly transition into Milwaukee comedy sports?
Not right away.
Okay.
Like, I remember coming back and hanging out with a friend of mine from high school, Bill Bartel, who played comedy sports for years.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just chatting and catching up, and he's like, oh, you got to come down. You got to come down some week. I'm like, everybody's down there. Todd's down there. Tim's down there. Genesec's down there. He's just naming all these people from our high school.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, you should come down. It's so much fun. Come down, come down. And I put it off till maybe January, I want to say.
Okay.
January of,
so you took a few. You took a few months.
Yeah, just to kind of settle, get into my job. And I've done
first full-time job,
the transition from college to, I actually lived at home my first year with my parents. Thank you, Mom and Dad. And it was a difficult transition being in college for 5 years to living back at home.
Oh, yeah.
And just difficult life transition, right? I mean, being surrounded by all your friends in a great city for a while, and now suddenly you're living at home with your parents and you have a real job and you have no social life, and it was just, it was different. So
welcome to adulthood.
Exactly. Yawn. I hate adulting still to this day, and I'm 46 years old. So I went down one night. I want to say it was like January. I feel like it was like December, January. It was in the winter.
Okay.
And I went down
on the
there.
Cusp of 99.
Yes, that's right. Okay. 99. Right. And sure enough, down there was Bill and Todd and Tim and Jason Dunizak and all these guys. And like the old school people that like I had known from when I was, you know, Dick was down there.
Yep.
And like, so I just saw all these familiar faces and like Rolly Cafaro and Steve Scholler, who had come up when I played in Madison. Sometimes Milwaukee would send players up to Madison and we'd kind of have like a Milwaukee-Madison matches.
Yeah, awesome.
And so that's how Rolly and I met, because Rolly came up. I'm sure we told this story, right? I saw his name was Rolly on the lineups. And my nickname was Rolo.
Yeah, yeah.
So
instant connection.
Yeah, so I'm like, your name's Rolly? He's like, your name's Rolo? And so, yeah, we remember each other from then. So, yeah, so then I came up and somebody told me, just start going to workshops. Just start coming to workshops Monday nights and start playing. Rolly did. I think it was Rolly Cafaro. He's like, just come in and start playing. So I started doing Monday night practices. Steve Scholler was the teacher.
Okay.
Steve and Kurt are brothers. And what's really creepy is Dave Nelson, who is my husband now, apparently I think was in those workshops, but I don't remember him at all. But he always tells me he remembers me at the workshops, and he would try to like talk to me, and apparently I would just like get up and walk away from him. Like I paid him like zero attention. I don't even remember him at those workshops, but
the courtship slowly ensued.
Very slowly, very slowly. So I just remember going to workshops for a while and finally, like, you know, I'd hang out there on the weekends and it was Rolly again. And I'm like, I don't get it. Like, how do I start playing? Like, I'm at the workshops. They're saying I should play. And Rolly's like, just call in. I'm like, well, don't I have to wait for Dick to tell me to call in? He's like, just call in. And I'm like, okay. So I called in and I got, you know, both Friday, both Saturday for the next, I don't know, 10, 15 years or something. I played every...
Incredible.
Yeah, I just played constantly then. That was just it.
That feels like an example of ask for forgiveness, not permission, right?
Yes, and like, I still go by that phrase all the time at work.
Can really get you far.
Yes, it can. And that's, I mean, honest to God, if it wasn't for Rolly saying, just call in.
Yeah,
then
that little push.
Yeah, because I was waiting for Dick to say something and everyone's like, Dick's never going to say it. Just call in.
Yeah,
I'm like, can I do that? I did. And yeah, then I started getting the 7:30 and 10 every Friday and Saturday night for the next forever years. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So you, within the span of a few years, got the tastes of two different locations.
Yeah.
Tell me just a little bit. What were some of the defining differences in your mind between CSC Milwaukee and CSC Madison at the time?
Okay. Well, it's
because every location handles
for sure
our matches ever so slightly
different. Yeah. Madison was a smaller troupe, right? A smaller group of people.
Okay.
And we had practices every week. And it was kind of like, if you didn't come to practice, you weren't playing that weekend.
Wow, sure. Yeah,
which was really fun. But sometimes as a college kid, we're like, really? Like, do I have to go to practice again? But it just became part of my weekly routine.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to practice every week. And when Comedy Sports Madison finally got their own place on State Street, like we did Pizza Hut upstairs, downstairs. We did Wendy's. We were in the West Side. We were back. I mean, we're all over the place. When we finally got our own place on State Street, I remember having a practice there, and Brad Knight, one of the funniest people I've ever known, and Alex Shapiro, again, one of the funniest people I've ever known, we held a practice, and we just started with like a suggestion, and it was just the players, right?
Mm-hmm.
We just started, had a suggestion. I think the suggestion was Mr. Keebler, like Keebler, no, Keebler cookies or Keebler,
yeah,
right? Those are cookies,
the
right?
Elves.
Yes,
yeah.
The elves. And for 3 hours, just played pretend. We just did the longest long form scene on the planet and did like an entire play. And I remember Brad Knight was Mr. Keebler, the principal at a school. And I remember the big twist at the end was he was actually an evil elf from this tree land, the Keebler elves. And but I mean, when I think about it now, it was like what we did as kids, right? Like
yes.
You play house or school or pretend. We did
oh my
it
gosh,
3 hours.
Playing yes. Is just long form
That's
improv.
All it is. That's all it is. So we would just have quote unquote practices, which were just long form scenes for like 2 or 3 hours. So like I said, and Madison was a tight knit group. Like they felt like family, and Like, so does Milwaukee, don't get me wrong. But, you know, like, they were with me in my developmental years of college and going through first relationships. And, you know, they were, like, the best friends and family around. And
I could see, like, with a slightly smaller troop, there's just, like, a little bit more intimacy amongst
everyone.
There's a little bit less attention to be shared amongst each other.
Well, and it was always,
that.
Like, the same people playing. Yeah. It was like, okay, this week I'll play with, you know, Shap and Brad. And next week I'll play on the team with Brian and Sheila. And, you know, it was, and then I started reffing at one point. Mary Parmentier was an incredibly strong female player in Madison. And she taught me something that I still think about to this day. When I started reffing and I'd practice the ref spiels, I had a lot of nervous energy because, like, the ref is, like, you know, guiding the whole show, right?
Oh, 100%.
So I remember standing there, but kind of like shifting my weight back and forth, kind of constantly moving in place.
Mm-hmm.
And she stopped me and she said, "No, stand still." And I didn't even realize I was moving. I'm like, "What do you mean?"
Yeah,
she's like, "You're moving back
feet.
And forth. Yeah, plant your feet." She's like, "You are a tree and your roots are in the ground. Stand still and strong."
Wow.
And to this day, I still remember that and I use that. And whenever I see a speaker speaking with that nervous energy, I think, no, stand still. You are a tree with your roots.
Plant your roots, yes.
So Mary Parmentier was incredibly strong and very confident. And I don't know, that was very, I mean, you asked me one question, the difference between Madison and Milwaukee, and I'm jumping into the difference with male and female.
No, this is great.
We should talk about.
No, go on. This is absolutely wonderful.
So Madison was close-knit, right?
Yeah.
Super close, always played with the same people. And we did the show format different. Like, we'd have team choice, and challenge, but we did it like themes. Like, we had, like, the list of games, and I wish I could think of an example, but it'd be something like, okay, I'm the captain, and you're the captain on the other team.
Okay.
And I'm going to – it was the Fair Oaks Free Agents and the Regent Street Rain Delay were the two teams in Madison. And so I'm Red, I'm the Rain Delay, and I'm going to challenge the Free Agents, Kyle and his team, to a game that – so I wouldn't give you a specific game. I'd be like, to a game that has numbers in it. Or to a game that, you know, like, it would be like a riddle. That's too easy, but it'd be like a riddle. So if it was like a game that has numbers in it, you'd have to look at the thing really quick and come up with a game.
Like three rooms or
five things or 185 or, you know, whatever.
Sure.
So we wouldn't challenge a specific game. So I guess what's different, what I was always shocked at the difference coming to Milwaukee, it was such a bigger group of people, but they kind of like plan what we're going to play backstage. And that's not giving anything away. It's like, what do you want to start with? Oh, we'll start with what are you doing today? Okay, what are you guys going to play? Okay, then we'll play this and that. But that blew my mind because we never did that. It was always like on the spot. And sometimes you'd be challenged to a game and have no idea what that game was. You'd turn and be like, what are we playing? I don't understand. So I remember that being different. Like, it's a bigger group in Milwaukee. And it's Milwaukee. It's the mecca of comedy sports, right?
At that time, 90s, there are just some incredible heavy hitters.
It was huge. I remember my first night getting a show in Milwaukee. And I was in the sound booth. I can't remember. I want to say Harz was in the sound booth.
Okay, yeah.
Do you remember Harz?
Now in Chicago.
Now he's in Chicago, right? Harz was in the sound booth. And I was kind of like, oh my God, I'm playing in Milwaukee. And I looked at the lineups and it was like Joe Cortese, Bruce Brinker, Brian Green, Angelo Farina. You know, it was these heavy hitters. I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing here? Like, and I knew all these guys. Like, they'd known me in Madison because they'd come up or I'd come down or whatever. You know, like I said, we did like these like matches against each other.
Mm-hmm.
But like, this felt big. Like, it felt, I mean, this is a silly comparison, but I feel like my time in Milwaukee felt like how people talk about when they're on SNL, like the heyday of their career. Like, it felt like this group of people. And I just remember standing there and freaking out and thinking, oh my God, Brian Green and Joe Cortese, how am I going to do this? And they were the first two people to come up to me before the show and say, hey, what's up? We're so glad you're here. This will be awesome. And they were so welcoming.
Yes.
And I remember just feeling high energy and having a great time and people saying I did great afterwards. And I don't remember the show. I just remember the before and the after, right?
I can't remember the improv I did last night. No, it's all gone.
So I remember it felt really good. And then I just started getting the shows and I don't know. I mean, I was a female. I still am, which is, it was rare. I mean, there were some females in Madison, like I said, Mary Parmentier, Sheila Haynes. But coming to Milwaukee, there didn't seem to be many at the time when I was there.
So, bit of a boys' club.
Right.
Yeah.
So I certainly stood out because I was a girl, right? But then what started happening is people realized I was funny. And they would come up to me after the show and say things like, you were actually good.
Oh, my God. God.
Yeah, or you know, it was offensive because they didn't think women could be funny. And I know it seems very different now. Like we have a lot of really strong comedians now, just in the public eye, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Kate McKinnon, right? Yep. But back then it was like, it always felt like girls had to be pretty. Mm. And I never felt like the pretty girl. And I was funny, but yet I wanted to be pretty. And so those two things always seem to fight each other. Does that, I don't know if that makes sense. Like the comedians I looked up to were like Carol Burnett, Gilda Radner.
Yeah.
You know, because they were funny and they just looked like a person. They weren't like these glamorous model women. They were just funny women. But yet when you learn about their history, like Gilda, she had, you know, anorexia and bulimia, and she desperately wanted to be pretty too and thin. And so it was really hard coming into the public eye as a comedian because right off the bat, you were considered not funny because you were a girl. And so when I'd come up on stage and then actually be funny, I think the crowd laughed harder because they were so shocked. And then I'd make these silly, crazy contortions with my face, which are not pretty. And I, you know, here I'm standing on stage and I want to be pretty, but I also just want to be funny. So screw it. So I'd make a silly face and then people would laugh. And that felt better than being told you're pretty.
Heck yes.
Does that make sense?
I think it does.
And I always looked up to strong women, like musicians, like Madonna. I used to love when I was in grade school and middle school. And think about what she was doing. Like a virgin, she was being sexual back then. Like, that's insane.
That's
like,
true.
Right? That was unheard of. And you know, Pat Benatar, she was a strong woman in music. And Ani DiFranco, who I've always loved in music, is a strong female paving her own way.
Yeah.
And so I've always looked up to strong women like that. And I don't know. I guess I wanted to be that in some way. And there were so few women there. Like Holly Ignatowski was there. But by the time I got there, it was really just Holly and me for a while. And we often didn't play at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So it was like me in a room full of men.
Sure.
So I tried my hardest.
Yeah.
To be funny. I think I did pretty good. You know, when you get a compliment from Angela Farina or Joe Cortese saying you're funny, I think you made it. But I don't know.
I mean, probably. That's probably a safe assessment.
I tried. I did. And then I started teaching workshops down there. And
okay. So now we got to change gears just a little bit.
Sure.
Tell me about how improv has affected your ability to teach.
Okay. Yeah, a lot. You know, being able to think on your feet.
Yes.
And when I started, I was still teaching at South Division, which was a really tough school to teach at when I started teaching. And I don't know what its reputation now, but I was exhausted and I didn't really like my job. And so every weekend I was doing the 7:30 and 10 and being out till bar time. But then during the week, getting up at 6 in the morning to teach all day.
Yeah.
So that's a very difficult schedule to hold. But I remember improv helping me because I wouldn't plan much in the classroom. Like, teachers are supposed to write out lesson plans and curriculum and like
back. Stick to the syllabus,
right,
Christine.
Right. When I started, there was like a zero curriculum, zero projects planned. It was just like, come up with whatever you want.
Because
it's not like math where you're teaching from a textbook.
Of course. Yeah.
Or like, oh, you have
it's
to
a creative
hit this. Yeah. So every
class,
school
yeah.
I've been in, every district I've been in, even till now where I'm in the Elmbrook district where I've created the curriculum for the high school art program, there was never a curriculum. So I just sort of made it up. So improv helped me because I'd go in a Monday morning after, you know, being out till 2:30, 3 o'clock Friday and Saturday night, being exhausted and walking in. There's kids. I'm like, huh, I guess I got to do something. Well, we're going to, and I'd kind of look at my supplies and be like, we're going to paint a circle. Just like make something up. Because I didn't plan anything. But I was so new to teaching. I didn't know. I mean, I think I'm a good teacher. But I didn't have like a curriculum that I had to follow. So,
but you were comfortable not having this rigid schedule.
Yeah. And I'd have this comfort level of like, I'm just going to make it up. And then I came up with actually some really great projects that I used for years in teaching. And I've been teaching. This is my 24th year teaching now.
Oh, my gosh.
And but yeah. So now what's really funny, though, 24 years in, education has changed a lot. And we do have to like write out lesson plans. And like I said, I've helped come up with the curriculum in my district for the art program at the high school level. And so now I'll walk in and I'll think, oh, I can't just make this up. Like, I have to follow what I created, what I did. did. So sometimes I feel like I just want to make something up, and I'm like, I actually have to follow the script this time.
And that's,
I know, but it's really helped me be comfortable and speak in front of people. You know, I actually have some
planting those roots, right?
Yes. I have some teacher friends who have a hard time getting up in front of people and talking, which doesn't make sense to me because you're a teacher and you get up in front of a room and talk.
One of the main things you do.
Right. So I'm really comfortable like speaking in front of the staff and, you know, presenting things or just getting up in front of my classroom and talking, and I'll just like jump on the table and start singing to my class to get their attention, and I'm just like a goofball, and I just I don't really care. I guess I kind of went back to that. I don't care. Like, I just don't care what I look like and what I'm doing. I want to get your attention.
Yeah.
And if that's through comedy in my classroom to help you learn, then that's what I'm going to do. And I think that works a lot for my
kids. I loved
kids.
The teachers that I had who were not afraid to be goofballs.
Yeah.
Who could clearly be themselves.
Yeah.
And in a way, whether consciously or subconsciously, I think that rubs off on the students a little bit.
I like, think so too. And
we can all just be who we are.
Right. And being an art teacher, you know, we bring in the kids who don't really have a place sometimes, who are struggling to find their place. And quite often their place is in the creative classes, art and theater and music. And and it's not as widely celebrated as the sports sometimes, right? But I changed that where I teach. I started the Fine Arts Extravaganza, like a day where we celebrate all these kids because they're just as important as the football players. But I think improv has definitely helped me get comfortable in my own classroom and doing what I do and speaking my mind, probably. I can't believe I haven't been fired for doing that before. But yeah, so it's just got me much more comfortable.
And so you have been teaching art for 24 years.
I know I have.
But you also said that you have taught improv workshops and stuff like that. How long did you teach workshops?
A couple years. I know I did a couple years.
Sure.
Because then we moved to First Street. Mm-hmm. And I think I taught there a little bit, but then I have a job in Elmbrook where I really actually enjoyed my job then finally. So I think I spent less time, you know, teaching at Comedy Sports.
And funneling your, more of your teaching energy into
my actual career of teaching.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. And that makes sense.
Right. But every once in a while, like I would come down and teach a workshop or something, but like a one-time thing.
Okay. Well, this is a perfect transition because you came in, you took the reins for a whole practice.
Yeah.
And there are two things that you taught us that have never left my brain since.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, that's
exciting. I'm not kidding. First was a mind web, like a suggestion web, where you had us practice getting like a single suggestion, and then you start branching out from it, and you just try to think of all these things that are related.
Right.
And when it comes to generating material in a comedy sports show, the immediacy of that word association can be a godsend for ideas and punchlines.
Right.
And so that mind web has stuck with me from the moment you introduced it.
Oh,
but
that's
not
good.
Only that, also you introduced us to this character chart.
Yeah.
I think you shared this printout, but it was like a character breakdown worksheet with like every conceivable category of like backstory for a character, like where were they born, what's their nickname, what's their occupation, what are their hobbies, what are their interests, what are their friends like, what do they do, it like this incredible list, which is when we're making up characters on the spot, having that like mental rubric I think can be so essential to streamline a character's decisions. Talk about how you utilize that mind web sort of idea in shows and your approach to characters.
Because
your character work is just a delight.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's very nice. Well, that mind web, I actually do in my classroom with my art students, particularly my AP art students. So, you know, the highest art class in the high school, right? Trying to create a portfolio for college credit.
Yeah.
We talk about mind maps. And I guess I do it in other classes too, but I do a whole lesson on that in there where you take a suggestion or their idea for art, right?
Uh-huh.
And you branch off of that. So if you're drawing it, you know, like I would take like a word. I feel like the word was caterpillar at that workshop, actually, because I remember talking about Alice in Wonderland. So I'm going to guess it was caterpillar. I don't know. Take a word. And if you were to write that word down on a piece of paper, and we did this, which is so different, I think, than what most people teach. at Comedy Sports because I was actually bringing in my career of teaching with, like, I remember I passed out paper and pencils and I had, like, a chart and, like, I'm drawing on a poster board.
Yes,
like,
you did.
What the hell are we doing? But I'm glad to hear it actually helped.
Yes.
So you take a word, the audience suggestion, for example, caterpillar. So I draw the word in this, write the word in the center of the paper and I draw a circle around it. And then I'm going to draw a line off of that word and start to list all these different things that I think about with caterpillar. So I wrote, like, butterfly, or put another line, and somebody said Alice in Wonderland. That's why I remember caterpillar. And so all these lines are branching off the word caterpillar, and you're trying to think of all the things you associate with caterpillar.
Yeah.
And then you start to think of all the things you associate from those words. So things I associate from caterpillar is butterfly. What do I associate with butterfly? You know, monarch, Mexico or something, right?
And Alice.
Yeah, and Alice in Wonderland, the caterpillar on the mushroom. And so I had everybody do these mind maps with paper and pencil. Now, is that realistic in a comedy sports show? No, you don't get, because we spend a lot of time at the workshop talking about that. But my point was, when we did it, I remember saying, okay, now you have to do this without paper and pencil. You have to do it in your mind the second you get a suggestion from the audience, and you only have 5 seconds. Go.
Yes.
And everyone's like, what? Because we spent all this time writing on paper and looking at charts and, like, So I said, this is what I do in my head.
Yeah.
When I get a suggestion, I immediately have a mind map going in my brain of, like, boom, 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 boom. What am I going to take? Caterpillar. I'm going to say caterpillar, silkworm, cobweb, basement, go. And that's where I'm going to start my scene. In a basement with a cobweb is how I started, based on the word caterpillar. I never would have thought of that had I not had the audience suggestion.
And also, don't you find that it can be far more rewarding to begin a scene kind of around the suggestion rather than just, like,
I'm a caterpillar.
Hitting it in its dead center, right?
Yeah. And we also did, I think when you referenced that character chart I shared, I remember starting the workshop with everybody just walking around the arena and me saying, you know, giving a suggestion of a kind of person. Like, okay, right now you're a 46-year-old art teacher. How would you walk?
Yeah.
And and everyone just had to start walking around the room like a 46-year-old art teacher. Well, now you're a 3-year-old or 2-year-old just learning to walk. How do you walk? And I remember trying to get people to think about how they would physically present themselves as a certain person, age, a character, whatever. I do this when I think of a character. How do I physically come off? Which is how all my faces are, right? Like, you know, or how do I stand? How do I talk? How do I walk? How do I move? And also that can have a lot to do with your history. So the history of the character. And granted, we're only doing scenes for 2 to 4 minutes, but this is what my brain is doing. I do a mind web. I'm, like, latching onto some sort of thing that connected to the suggestion. And I'm thinking about how physically can I walk into the scene?
Yes.
How do I sound? What does my face look like? Because my face is going to look different as a 46-year-old art teacher suggestion versus, you know, a 20-year-old guy who plays guitar in a band. I'm going to walk differently.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk differently. I'm going to act differently. I'm going to look differently. And so I try to think of all those things ahead of time, which is only within 5 seconds to do a scene.
Yeah. These sorts of ways of thinking can help us streamline the improv we do. So we're not in our heads as much.
Yeah.
And we allow our character just makes the decisions, right? We're not making the decisions. Our character can. And if you're thinking, what's their backstory?
Right.
If you have the mental capacity and space to do that, hold that, and be listening in the present moment, you're going to get in a state of flow.
Right. Well, and sometimes you don't, and it's hard. It's really hard, right? I mean, the ref says, your suggestion is caterpillar, go. And in that moment, I'm like, in my head. And then I go, does it always work? No. But, you know, I mean, that's just kind of what I taught in that workshop and what my brain is. I'm glad it stuck with you.
It truly has. I'm not blowing smoke, Kristen.
Oh,
I'm
so glad to hear that.
It truly has stuck.
I'm so glad to hear that. Like Mary Parmentier's planting your feet on the ground stuck with me. And I use that in my classroom, too. And it's good to get those lessons that help you throughout. I'm really glad you said that. Thank you.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's
okay,
awesome.
So I got to ask. I have to. We got to hear the story. How did you get your nickname of Rolo?
Oh, my God. Well, Capriolo is my Italian last name from birth. I didn't change my name when I got married because really, why would I? I was in Madison junior year, I want to say, because I was living in a roach-infested apartment on the 5th floor on Spring Street. And I remember being in my apartment and hearing Brian Judkins and Mark Molnitsky down on the street driving in my neighborhood, yelling, Capriolo, Capriolo, where are you, Capriolo? I'm looked out the window. I'm like, are you drunk, Judkins? Which is funny because neither of those guys drink. And they shortened it from Cappy Rolo to Rolo. I think they just didn't know how to pronounce my name. And they shortened it to Rolo, and it stuck from that moment.
Wow.
To now when I go down there, and I guess people call me Christine down there, and sometimes I don't even answer because I'm not used to that at Comedy Sports. It's always Rolo. I mean, Rolo was how... Yeah, that was it. It was Mark and Brian, I think, gave it to me. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Christine, we're going to play a few real quick games.
Okay.
Which are of your devising.
Well,
you have paved the way, Christine.
Oh, thank you.
So, first of all,
yeah.
We got a bunch of comedy sports games.
Okay.
Face down. I want you to pick two and then tell me which one you would rather play in a show.
In a show. Well, let's see. All right, let's see. I got quadrants.
Okay.
And slow-mo. Now, let's see. These are both fun games, totally different. Quadrants, you kind of divide up the stage into four sections, kind of like a four-square game on the playground. And each section has a different suggestion, right?
Like an endowment of a type.
Right.
An emotion, an accent, a theater style,
so when you're standing in that part of the stage, you are using that endowment in the scene, right? So I might be over on the French part while you're over in, you know, doing... Rocky's accent voice or whatever, right?
I'm in the Sylvester Stallone space, yes.
So that's quadrants, which is really fun, and I don't remember playing that much.
It doesn't get played.
No, a lot of these games don't get played much, and we should bring them back.
Mm-hmm.
And then slow-mo is a game where two people, one from each team, does just kind of a regular household activity, like vacuuming is the suggestion, but we do it like an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
And
sometimes known as slow-mo Olympics.
Okay. And so if you and I are on stage doing this, we are acting out vacuuming as an Olympic sport in slow motion.
Super duper
slow motion. While the other two people, someone's doing like the commentary of the scene and someone's like the expert. Like when you watch the Olympics, you always have like, you know, I used to be the professional figure skater.
Back in 82.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I have to admit, I loved that game
because
it played to my strength of making silly faces for slow-mo.
Oh, and in slow motion.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So
All the silly faces come out. Yes.
So I would, you know, usually in slow-mo, like kind of the gimmick of the game is, you know, we're trying to vacuum, but at some point during the scene, you know, I might try to sabotage your vacuum by throwing extra dirt in your space and you might get mad and, you know, take your vacuum head and smack me in the head with it or something like that, whatever.
Yeah.
So I would then get to react in slow motion, making faces in slow motion.
Yep.
And I knew I could do that well. I could look really goofy
really
easily.
Yes.
And so I guess I'll play to my strengths here on that, and I would say slow-mo, because we haven't played that in a long time either, I think.
I also adore slow-mo.
That's a fun one.
I love being the person who gets to move slow.
Yes. It's so fun. And it's
so
funny.
Fun.
I remember teaching it. And trying to tell people slow down, and they're like moving regular speed. I'm like, no,
slower.
Like, what don't you understand about that? But yeah, because when it's done well and super slow, and then reacting, it's like, you know, that Matrix thing, right? When the bullets go off, and then the person leans back and does that slow motion lean back from the bullets. That's what the whole game is. Everything is slowed down, and you can get very physical. You know, I like that physical comedy of, like I said, like Carol Burnett, Gilda Radner jumping around in her bed for SNL. Lucy, right? That physical comedy, I think, plays a very important role in improv, because if you can pull that off, I think that gets the crowd excited. And so I'd say slow-mo.
Okay.
That's my fun one.
Okay, awesome. We're going to move on to a would you rather
round.
Oh,
boy. Okay. These are fun. My kids love these, too.
All right, here we go. Would you rather have fish for hands... or lick all the dead bugs off the front of a car windshield?
I think I'd rather have fish hands. Wait, but that's forever? But the licking is just the ones?
I think so.
I'm going to do fish hands.
You're going to do fish hands?
I am. I'm going to find a way to paint and teach with fish hands. I can't lick bugs. Bugs are so disgusting to me.
The gills and the scales might be a nice texture.
It would
like,
be a very
like a
good texture.
Brush
with, or like with jelly plate printing, I could do. Yeah, I'll do fish hands.
There you go, fish hands.
And I could swim like nobody's business then, I bet, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'd be an Olympic swimmer. Talk about Olympics.
Yeah, oh my God. All right, gonna hit you with one more here. Mm-hmm. Would you rather? Oh, this is a classic here.
Okay.
This is a classic.
All right.
Would you rather
yeah.
have the ability uh-huh. to become invisible
oh.
or to fly?
Fly.
Yeah.
I am a birder. Do you know that?
Yes, you are.
I love my birds.
Yes, you are.
I'm into birds so much. My son got me into birds. And now he doesn't like them anymore because he's 12 and he's becoming a teenager and he's too cool for what mommy likes. And it breaks my heart. But I love birds and I go birding and I would fly. Oh my God, would I fly? I dream I can fly. Yeah. I would fly.
Are there better dreams than when you have the ability to fly
oh,
at
God.
Your own will? I don't know if there are any better dreams.
No,
than those.
It's amazing. Flying? Yeah. You just yeah. look down and you're like, oh my God, I'm flying? It's the coolest thing ever.
At your own will, you just think it and
yeah.
it occurs.
Just think it and you can like, oh my God, I would, mm-hmm. oh my God, you'd never see me. I'd be in the air constantly. That's me. I would fly.
The freedom. Yeah. 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 I would agree. It would be hard to argue that.
Yeah.
If you said, if you said you'd rather become invisible,
believe me.
I'd question your ethics. for what purpose? Where are you going
right?
invisible,
what
Christine?
What are you doing? No, I would fly in a heartbeat. Wouldn't yeah. you?
Yes.
I'd love to try it.
Yes.
Let's do it.
One day. Christine, it has been such a joy to have you on the other side of the table.
Oh, thanks, Kyle. This has been a blast. Thank you so much for interviewing me. What a treat.
Christine, I have such respect for everything you do.
Oh, thanks.
You do an incredible job hosting. I hope I even did a fraction.
Well, your voice is amazing.
You did.
Thank you so much, Kyle. This was a blast.
Thank you, Christine. Rolo will be taking the reins in the next episode. But until then, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is produced and engineered by Kyle Hannikin. Our announcer is PJ Rockwell. Check us out on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Comments and questions can be sent to thecomedysportspodcast@gmail.com. Created and hosted by me, Christine Rolo Capriolo. Check you later.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is an independent production made by CSC Players. The views and opinions expressed by the podcast host and any guests are their own and do not represent the views and opinions of any CSE location or CSE worldwide. Vocabulary used by the host and guests is not necessarily representative of the CSE brand.